I got stuff for you.
Holy moly. I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back to Crypto Podcast.
I am the great and powerful Mr. Reed.
Yes, and I'm Jake Clone 26.
Yes.
Indeed. Indubitably.
Indubitably.
That's what they say.
Is it? Who's they?
The, you know, them. The scientists from the cartoons, you know.
I was going to
say. The evil scientists. Indubitably.
Indubitably.
I have no idea. I'm Jake Clone 26. We're back. Welcome to Crypto Corn Podcast.
We're doing a much more relaxed episode this week. Yes. Yes.
Well, we got...
I am tired. We just got back from Squonk, and we're literally going tomorrow to Hocking Hills.
For Squonkapalooza.
So we have...
I mean, from Squonkapalooza to Hocking Hills Bigfoot Festival. I'm tired still.
From Cry Pig to the biggest Bigfoot festival in the world.
Mm-hmm. And Turtle Man's going to be there. Yeet, yeet!
And Wild Bill.
Hoorah!
Hoorah!
We're going to get a hoorah, yeet, yeet.
So
1-2 punch.
I think we're going to put Turtle Man on your shoulders.
Okay.
And we're going to put Wild Bill on my shoulders, and we're going to play Land Chicken.
Ooh, okay. I think we could do that. I think we'd go to Swamp somewhere, too, or even the playing field out a little bit. You know, Bill has the advantage on land.
I was going to say, you think you can move in me and you are at the bottom.
Right, I know that.
You think you can move better in a swamp than I can?
Well, no, but I think Turtle Man can move in the swamp better than Bill can. So see, it'll even it all out.
But they're on our shoulders.
Yeah,
so they're
but
not
you know how it works.
Water.
They got to fight, though. We're not the ones fighting.
Because even though I'm larger than you, I definitely think I can move better in a swamp than you can.
100%. No, that's true.
The only way
I would have an advantage is if you got sunk and stuck.
That's only happened one time, and it wasn't mud. It was chemical waste.
So yeah, I just need to dump a bunch of chemical waste in there.
No, I move like a marine mammal. I'll just disappear, and you'll be like, where'd he go?
And I
whale
just get
noises
pulled under.
Yeah,
a horror film.
Death rolls like a crocodile.
Yeah,
I may not be the fastest swimmer, but man, I'm not going to drown.
I'm bad in the water. I can't swim, but I cannot drown.
Michael,
I keep myself from drowning.
Yeah, I'm not going to drown.
I mean, I can swim, but
I can swim forever.
Yeah,
I'm just not going to get anywhere fast.
That's 100% how I
move like a manatee.
You swim better than me. I can swim. I can't swim properly, like fast, like how they do in a pool. Like, I don't know.
All right. So today is, I think, I may be wrong because it happens from time to time. The first time we're going to ever revisit an episode.
Uh-oh.
But I'm not going to tell you what episode we're revisiting because I have like a short version of a new cryptid being introduced that connects to one of our old fan favorites.
Okay. Oh, it's a fan favorite, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we'll see if you can get it.
All right.
We'll see.
That's my goal, is to guess it, to ruin it.
We'll see.
I think I will.
I mean, I don't think you'll have trouble guessing what this one is.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about a specific, oh my gosh. I'm tired. I'm brain dead. A winged humanoids.
Ooh.
So creatures that are vaguely man-like and yet have the ominous wings that allow them to fly through the air.
I know what it is already. Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's Bat Squatch.
You think it's Bat Squatch?
Yep.
Not Mothman.
Nope.
Not the Chicago Mothman.
Nope.
Not the Ropin'.
I'm going right to Bat Squatch.
All right. So these tales we're going to talk about are these winged humanoids that have glowing parts to them.
Ooh, okay.
So
I'm stuck on Bat Squatch.
What was the winged creature that had a glowing part.
Probably the Van Meter Visitor.
Yes.
All right, that's the one.
Yes.
Oh, it's not Bad Squatch.
It's Bad Squatch.
It is?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. I made up the glowing thing.
Oh. Oh, it really is Bad Squatch?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Look at me. He shoots, he scores.
So there's a report. there's, I hate you.
I know.
From winged men to mysterious things more animal-like. So it's a big variety of when we talk about winged humanoids. That some of them look just like people with wings.
Yeah.
We're going to lean more towards the more bat humanoid creatures.
Okay.
Like our typical Bat Squatch.
Okay.
Where Bat Squatch himself from the Mount St. Helens eruption area was much more just like kind of a primate
had
and
wings.
A giant bat were together.
Gotcha. Okay.
It definitely still had more bat features.
Than humanoid.
Yeah, than human, but it was, you know, the upright posture, which bats kind of crawl like that. And if you watch, like, vampire bats, I think they crawl a lot more than they fly. They hop like little frogs.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's how they feed.
I didn't know they did that more than flying.
Yeah, it's because the islands that some vampire bat species are from.
Yeah.
It's just easier because nothing eats them.
I mean, that makes sense. If you guys haven't listened to our Bat Squatch episode, I believe it's in season one.
It's episode 17.
I have no idea. I think, are you guessing or?
I'm guessing.
Okay. Somewhere back in there. So check out season one, and I guess you can kind of see how we were doing this back then as well, too. So that's kind of a fun little throwback.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. So let's see the Bat Squatch, the update. What do you got for me?
Well, this is a whole new one. This is the Bat Squatch from Mississippi.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the original one, like you just mentioned earlier, from people saw when Mount St. Helens erupted, they seen this thing flying.
After.
Right. That's what I meant. Not during the actual eruption, but after it erupted, that's when people first seen the Bat Squatch as we know today.
We're going to recover a little bit of the Bat Squatch stuff in this episode.
Okay.
Just to go over some of the details.
A little refresher.
Mm-hmm. So one of the such winged abominations that has been spotted over the years is the massive, by the massive Mississippi River of the United States, seemed to be home to a winged monstrosity from hell itself. Mm. The Mississippi Batman.
That's just some guy from Mississippi.
It sounds like it. The Batman of Mississippi. One of the first and perhaps well-known of the few sightings of the creature that would later become known as the Man-Bat of Mississippi.
The Man-Bat.
They can't call it Batman.
I know.
Was made in 1991 by a witness who was out in the evening with his two friends there in their hometown of Manchee, Missouri. That's MS is Missouri, right?
Mississippi.
Mississippi, so mm-hmm. Manchester, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
They were up to a bit of no good at the time, they said. They were hanging out by a liquor store, trying to get someone to buy them alcohol since they were very well underage. When something the witnesses said they did about three times a week. So these three boys, you know, they're like 17, 18.
Mm-hmm.
About three times a week, they hung out in front of the liquor store trying to get some adult to buy them alcohol.
I gotcha. I'm making sure that it's Mississippi and not Missouri, because now I'm second guessing myself.
I think you're right.
Okay.
So they're underage.
Yes.
They managed to get somebody and take their usual hangout, you know, in the nearby park around 9 p.m. But before they could enjoy their ill-gotten fruits and open a single can of beer or a bottle of booze, something bizarre would happen. This is what one of the witnesses says.
Uh-oh.
We pulled to the park and got started to get out of the truck. We had not yet opened the booze, so the booze did not influence what we've seen at all. I was sitting in the middle, and my friend was getting out of the passenger side door. When he got out, I got out, and I noticed it sounded the sound of tennis balls bouncing on the tennis court. I looked and saw a figure bouncing a tennis ball.
Hmm.
So they're in this like local little park, getting ready to get out and, you know, hang out and drink. They hear the bouncing tennis balls, and you look over, and there's a figure bouncing a tennis ball.
Which, that sound, if anyone's been around, play tennis at all, it's very distinct.
It's very distinct.
You know what that sound is.
The figure was about 6 foot tall and wearing what appeared to be an all-black cloak. It looked at me, and it had some sort of pouch on its back. Me and my friend, who got out of the truck, saw the figure and told the driver of the truck to look. He did and saw the same thing. And in a flash, we jumped back in the truck and headed down the road to figure out what we had seen. We got a few miles away in distance, and we saw something coming at us, a large, extremely large, bat-like monster. It was several feet away from us, but we could make out its glowing red eyes. It passed right in front of the windshield and vanished into the darkness on the side of the road. We rushed to one of our houses and didn't drink that, you know, that night at all. We didn't do anything besides stay up all night watching the windows. I'm a skeptic when it comes to anything paranormal, but I know I saw something.
Okay, it's very reminiscent, though, of some Mothman.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Some of the original Mothman's chasing the truck. Mm-hmm. Even some of the Chicago Mothman stuff, which is a whole, in our opinion, a whole different thing.
And the red eye. Oh, yes. And but the red
eyes.
Glowing
red eyes is Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
Beware the glowing red eyes.
Right.
You know?
Like from the movie.
But yeah, so they see this thing that is roughly humanoid enough to at first be mistaken as a human. But mm-hmm. you know, the longer they look at it, they're like, that's not a person.
Well, I mean, anything bouncing a tennis ball, I'm going to immediately think human.
But it was bouncing a tennis ball, like you said. That's so weird.
Yeah.
Was it just entertaining itself? Or just, you know, is it one of these animals or things that are smart enough to be like, oh, this is interesting?
That's quite the coordination, too, to do with something like that.
Little hands. Secretary birds do that. They bounce golf balls.
Really?
Yeah. So they started to do it a long time ago. Secretary birds are large African birds. They can fly, but they live on land. They eat venomous snakes and all kinds of stuff. They love eggs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they take eggs and crush them.
Oh.
But they figured out that golf balls bounce.
Yeah.
And they just enjoy it.
Yeah.
So they'll run on golf courses and steal golf balls.
That's funny.
And run to like a road. And they'll just bounce it. And you'll see them jump and like flap their wings and get all excited when it bounces.
That's pretty cool.
So, just to say, this is not outside of known behaviors of some predatory animals.
I guess. I mean,
it's odd. Don't get me wrong, but
it is. I just know, being a human being, growing up playing sports,
mm-hmm.
to dribble a basketball or to bounce a tennis ball.
I don't think it was continuously bouncing it.
Like I would even say just bounce and catch, bounce and catch.
I don't think it was doing that.
You don't think so?
Okay. I think it was picking it up, throwing it, bouncing. Yeah, picking it up, throwing it.
Bounce. Okay. That would make a lot more sense. Okay.
That's how I read it. But
that's how I would agree with that making more sense. When you first said it, I imagine
not
it
like
just catching
there,
it.
Like boing, boing,
bouncing it like boing. Because it takes a lot of coordination, mm-hmm. and it's not something you just can pick up and do.
Yeah, I don't.
Like when I was a kid.
That's not how I read it.
Yeah, but. You had to take the time to learn. That's a skill, a learned skill.
No, to me, it was more like the secretary bird where it's just like it picks one up, slams it, bounce.
That makes
bounce.
More sense. Okay.
I think we'll always find another one.
Yeah, I would. Tend to agree with you. That makes a lot more sense because it does make a dunk 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 dunk. I don't know. It's an entertaining sound.
But yeah, but they chased a car a few miles. It seems like, and it just flew in front of the car. You know, seeing the glowing red eyes, disappeared. So is it just running the kids off? Is it curious? Is it doing any of that? But like you said, it's both. A lot of the Mothman sightings in Chicago were like this, and a lot of the original Mothman sightings were like this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Well, I think the red eyes is not good.
But they just, red eyes.
Since doing this show, anything that falls under red eyes, even Moth, I don't care. We know Mothman never hurt nobody.
I think Mothman had glowing red eyes and wasn't bad.
I still think red eyes are a bad indicator.
I think in general, yes.
Yeah.
But I don't think necessarily just because it has glowing red eyes.
I guess. There's always exceptions to the rule, right?
Infrared and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
Because we can see it. So, we talked about with like some of the deep sea fish using red light because other fish can't see it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Oh, there could be animals like that. Like, that's why you use red lights for hunting coons at night.
I guess.
Because we can see red light and they can't.
Right.
So they think they're still hidden.
Okay. Then let me just say this then. If you're ever out in the woods and you see something with red eyes,
I don't trust it.
Err on the side of caution.
Unless it's Mothman trying to gently hand you something.
Don't take it. You'll get radiation poisoning.
Oh, yeah. But it's not on purpose.
Right. Just don't take it. Don't accept gifts.
It's worth it.
Don't accept gifts and trust dogs.
For the Mothman to hand you something?
It's worth it.
It's worth it. Only it's only mild.
Right. Yeah. Just my hand sloughs off.
Well, no, that's not mild radiation poisoning. Oh,
okay. Okay.
That's, I'm going to say, acute or severe.
All right. I'll just show up like 3 generations later.
Yeah. See? Not your problem.
Right. Yeah.
So, interesting, though. This was not the only sighting of this weird flying creatures around the skies of Mississippi.
Okay.
According to famous cryptozoologist and researcher, Linda Godfrey.
Ooh.
God rest her soul.
Yeah.
In the mid-1990s, which is when this happened, there were 2 separate sightings of flying humanoids of some sort in the vicinities of La Crosse, Wisconsin, and in the town of Madford. In these cases, the entity was described as having wings and extremely reptilian features.
Interesting. Okay.
So having bat-like wings, with what she could best describe as a reptilian-like, you know, reptilian other features were more reptilian, scales and big teeth and those kind of things.
Interesting.
Godfrey covered this in her book, Hunting the American Werewolf. She writes this of these encounters. Another man and his son on the riverbanks of La Crosse, while hunting for their lost dog, they saw what they could best describe as a lizard man, covered in brownish scales and having very, very reptilian looks. It did not have its mouth open or its arms extended. Around the same time, a state DNR warden and separately a group of highway workers would also describe a reptile man on the highway near 13th in Medford. So this whole little outbreak, three different sets of eyewitnesses described a reptile man. Why would we include a reptile man in this story?
Because
it possessed massive wings, and when it was seen, it flew out of view in all three encounters.
Okay. Reptile men have wings?
This one did.
Right. This would be the first time I think I've heard that.
Rather bizarrely, Godfrey has managed to dig up yet another report of a strange flying humanoid in the same area as La Crosse. Also more recent, the alleged encounter occurred on 9:30 p.m. on September of 2006 along a dark, densely wooded rural road named Briggs Road, which is located just north of La Crosse and was right up against the Upper Mississippi River Wildlife National Refuge and Fish Refuge. They're huge. It's a huge place.
Okay. Sounds nice.
On this evening, the main witness, known as only by the Cherokee name Wahala, was driving along a gloomy road with his 25-year-old son when they startled by the sight of a creature out of a nightmare just looming in the darkness. Past the flickering of trees they illuminated in their headlights, they described it as a bat-like, man-like creature, at least 7 feet tall, with 12-foot wingspan, possessing a muzzled face, fully visible sharp teeth that looked very angry.
Mm.
This is more traditional bat squatch, talking about that muzzle with these big oversized teeth.
The gnashing teeth. Mm-hmm. That's a word you haven't used in a while.
The gnashing of teeth.
Right.
The strange abomination reportedly flew right at their windshield on a collision course, apparently snarling at them, then flew up and rose into the darkness with it, letting out all kinds of shrieks. So it's like it charged them. It looked like it was going to run right into their windshield right at the last minute, pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, screeching the whole time.
Like a bluff charge, kind of.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, if you're going a fully animalistic thing, that's what it seems like. Like, it had no intention of running into something.
Right.
You called its bluff.
Like you approaching a kill deer, and it, like, puts on a threat this way. Like, it's going to get you.
Yeah.
And then flies off.
Yeah.
Good.
Except 7 feet tall.
Right, yeah. A little different. Same behavior.
So after this, though, you already mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
The two witnesses then reported being overwhelmed with a sudden sense of
fear,
extreme nausea.
Oh, okay. Oh, radiation,
which made them incredibly ill and forced them to, you know, park on the side of the road.
Mm.
They started vomiting profusely.
Mm.
They weren't very scared. I want to make that clear. They were shooken, but they weren't like, that thing's gonna eat us.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, like, could it also be infrasound, maybe? But if it was, they would probably maybe exhibit some fear.
It doesn't have to. You're right. Infrasound can present in the fear or in other ways.
Depends on the frequency.
Yeah. This unexplainable sickness apparently lasted a whole week after the encounter and just sort of started to fade away. Well, Hollywood would say this of what the BC had seen. It had distorted limbs, a long sort of human leg with big claws, huge bat-like wings with quote-unquote arms somewhat attached to them. So kind of like where the bats have is kind of what he's describing, is the arm and hand is the wing.
Okay.
But it still has hands.
Okay.
I remember the teeth and that horrible scream we heard. It was terrifying. I've been living in this valley my entire life and it's seen some very strange things. After all, the Mississippi Upper Wildlife Refuge is the largest in the country and it's right in our back door. It hides a lot of strange creatures, but I had never seen anything like this. It was rent the movie Bram Stoker's Dracula, and the Dracula creature looks like it, or better yet, the ones from Van Helsing.
Mm.
So, yeah.
So he saw Dracula.
Yeah, I know. The bat version of Dracula.
Yes. I know. Well, I mean, yeah. So what's it? It just didn't turn over yet. I would hope it's. He should have chose the one from Dracula Dead and Loving It with Leslie Nielsen. You ever seen that movie?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. It's a Dracula movie, but it's funny.
Okay.
It's a Leslie Nielsen version, if you can imagine that.
Sure. It's hard to ascertain what the two witnesses felt so nauseous, whether it was radiation poisoning,
mm-hmm.
or they was just overtaken by fear and they just didn't realize it, you know, and just their body, after the adrenaline wore off.
Yeah,
and,
I've been there.
Yeah. If anybody's ever been, like, extreme adrenaline, you get really sick after. Because it's an emergency chemical for your body.
Uh-huh.
So even though your body produces it, it does have side effects in your body.
You have a crash,
yeah.
Basically. Let's put it that
and
way.
And it can, depending on how excited you are, it can make you very sick.
Oh, it can do weird things. It happened to me when driving that box truck.
But lasting for over a week would not normally be a part of that.
No, that's a little different.
So I can see it, that it was either radiation poisoning. We've talked about radiation poisoning with the Mothman, bat-like creatures a lot. If they're perfectly just animals from another place, like we talked about with the Mothman, like interdimensional creatures, that transfer through dimensions could leave you highly, highly irradiated. Or where they're from is just, compared to us,
naturally
extremely much more irradiated than we live in. It's fine for them,
mm-hmm.
and it's toxic to us. And you're curious about that. There's all kinds of things that are like that in our life, you know, in our biosphere, in our planet.
I was going to say, I think hell is extremely radiated. That's probably where these things came from. It's a theory.
I mean, it is a theory.
That's why the fire.
I don't know. They are very scary looking, but so far, yeah. Once again, same with the bat squatch thread. It didn't do anything.
Right.
Because the bat squatch tried to eat people.
He did.
But he
tried.
Never succeeded.
Right. He tried, just wasn't good at it.
To me, it was very much the bat squatch. The original bat squatch was just a very hungry animal.
Mm-hmm.
It was
out of its element.
It was punching way above its weight class.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody know, traditionally speaking, flying animals are built very, very sparsely.
Meaning?
They're very weak.
Okay, there you go.
All right, and their bones are like either hollow.
Thin.
Or they don't weigh as much as they look.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Quetzalcoatl is the largest flying reptile or largest flying thing ever discovered.
They have a replica statue at Toledo Zoo?
Yeah,
Toledo Zoo in Ohio.
As tall as a giraffe. We estimate the highest they weighed is 600 pounds.
Which is not that much for something that big.
A couple weeks ago, it was only two of me.
Yeah.
They weighed as much as two of me.
Nice.
So that's not that big when you're talking about a 20-something foot tall animal.
Right, yeah.
With a 40-foot wingspan.
Right.
So if these bat squatch creatures kind of follow that same thing, you know, they may only weigh 100 pounds. So even though they're 7 foot tall, they're just, mm-hmm. you know, only 100 pounds. Because they have to be lightly built to fly around and maneuver.
Right. That makes sense.
So an animal of that size would probably be feeding, if it's eating large animals, I mean, we're talking probably raccoon-sized animals, cat-sized animals, generally speaking. A human is just a little, even though they look scary, a human is just a little bit too hard to grab.
A little bit bigger than that.
An adult human.
Right. Bigger than a raccoon.
Because we'll talk about the stories with the young ladies here later that we covered in the original one.
Okay.
Where it tried to pick up that tent with the two young ladies and it didn't.
Didn't do very well with it.
It didn't.
Mm-mm.
But yeah. So why they got sick is really hard to find. Godfrey did actually follow up with a report and visit the scene of the encounter with Wahala, and even visit the whole area. The witness and a hunter friend of his had actually made a rather macabre discovery that may or not you not be tied to it all. So Godfrey goes up to where Hala and his son had the encounter. They meet one of Wahala's hunting friends that had made a discovery.
Okay.
So it could be or maybe not connected. There, sprawled out in the brushes just off the road, was a deer carcass that was in quite a strange state, right where the encounter happened, very quickly after.
Hmm.
So Godfrey had said this of her findings. There were no visible drag marks and a complete absence of blood on the ground. The deer carcass lay there right on the side of the road, its back facing the road. The white area we saw had the exposed layer of winter fat, the skin having been meticulously torn from the forelimbs, which remained intact along with the head. No bullet wounds, no visible bite marks either. There was no odor, probably because the temperature had been, you know, at or below freezing and only in the 50s during the day. So the animal was not rotting very quickly.
Okay.
The hunter, which was estimated the carcass was no older than 3 to maybe 4 days. It was a small deer that only weighed about 60 pounds.
Okay.
The low weight estimate was due to the fact of the entire haunch section, the lower abdomen, and the rear limbs being missing.
Okay, so something ate him.
But it seemed like whatever was eating it, I was meticulously, like, taking it apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that could be anything from... it doesn't have to be a big creature. It could be bugs.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because it wasn't bugs. It was the middle of winter.
Could be winter bugs.
There are a couple species of winter bugs. Not many decomposer. The spine was still protruding, which was still retained the prized rib and tenderloins, mm-hmm. Which certainly would have been taken by hunters. So there's a big problem here. I'll bring this up. There's a big problem here with poaching in Ohio.
Yeah.
And all they cut out is literally the loin of the deer.
The good
meat. The back strip.
Yeah.
And they'll leave the whole rest of the carcass there.
The desired meat from the deer, yeah. Which is just wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd shoot you for that. I mean, I'm all fine for hunting and killing an animal.
Yeah.
You use that animal, though. You eat everything. Yes.
I'm 100% pro hunting. I think it's a great thing because the deer, especially around here, they get so overpopulated so fast and
they don't have any, all of their natural predators are pretty much gone.
Yeah. And they cause a lot of environmental destruction to just farmers and food and production in general. And they cause a lot of automobile accidents and cause a lot of
tasty.
Well, that's a good thing on the other end of it. But they cause a lot of problems just with vehicular, but people get hit in car crash. Like
we have, I think, 100 people die a year roughly in Ohio from
deer
wrecks.
Which is almost unbelievable if you don't stop and think about it. But yeah, so I'm off ethical hunting. Like hunting's a good thing. Just don't need to be going in poaching.
No.
There's certain ways to do things, but hey, feed your family. I'm all for hunting.
That's all I was saying is that it's odd for this to be a poached, because it looks like a human was taking this deer apart,
mm-hmm.
and to leave that is a very odd thing.
Yeah.
The hindquarters are not nearly as prized as the loin and the roast.
Well, like you said, the lower, or the back feet, too, are gone.
Yeah, it was just like the whole back hindquarters.
Okay.
So that's one thought, that a human had cut it mm-hmm. and just took the back hindquarters, which makes
no sense.
Very little sense.
Right, yeah. And the guts out. Took the guts out, basically, you said.
Yeah, it was cleaned.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the remains did not appear to have cuts with a knife, said Wahala's hunting friend. The fact is the carcass was nearly bloodless, and there was very little or no blood found on the road or any vicinity, which would include, you know, like its haunches were ripped off, or it was hit by a car.
Mm-hmm.
It appears the carcass probably bled out somewhere else, and then it was carried to the spot to be disposed of. That is another thought, is there's places where people will just ditch deer.
For sure.
So this, you know, is an old back road. Just throw it out. That happened to us one time in Arkansas.
Mm.
Somebody was poaching. We were literally fishing under this bridge in Walnut Bayou. There you go. Anybody can look it up. And a poacher that had gotten caught because of this, the guy we were staying with.
Yeah.
Because he threw all of his poached animal carcasses over into the bayou while we were down there.
Oh, so you caught him.
Our neighbor caught him. Not our neighbor, the guy we were staying with, pulled out, seen who it was. The guy seen that it was the guy we were staying with, and was like, that's not good.
Yeah.
Because the guy we were staying with is really high up in the county.
Oh, no.
Yes, and he got caught.
Oh, no. So what's the repercussions of that?
He was in jail for a while.
Really?
Yeah, because he threw dozens of animal carcasses that were poached over in that one installment.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that's so bad. Don't poach.
Yeah. And the guy we're staying with will literally give you animals to eat, like food, cleaned. Like, he's a commercial fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're hungry, he gives it to churches to give out and all kinds of, like, if you need to eat, eat.
Right.
Anyways, there was also no apparently visible tooth marks or bite marks left on the carcass, as if something had carried it with its mouth.
Okay.
We're not in the position to conduct a complete forensic investigation of the animal. Oddly, an unusual and unopened dark garbage bag lay adjacent towards the carcass towards the road. The yard carcass was apparently still there the next day in the same condition, which seems odd. The, you know, something hadn't really no scavengers really got into it, but it was oddly devoid of any signs of activity around it. No animals were coming checking out an opened carcass. Very odd. At the time, Ohala and his friend had claimed that they could see something black at the top of the nearby hill that looked like an inky ribbon unfurling. And this, plus the gruesome sight and the weird deer carcass splayed out nearby, were unsettling enough that they felt the time to vacate the area completely. It was hard to see what was going on here, or just what the connection, if any, to the unusual deer carcass was to the man bat. But it was very odd, it was still odd at the very least. So what do you think? Do you think this thing was cleaning this carcass?
Well, something obviously was. You said something about like it getting hit, but that wouldn't be it. There would be signs of blood or some kind of trauma of being ripped off from getting hit by a vehicle, you know?
Yeah.
It could be this thing. I mean, it could be a coincidence that they saw it there, at the same time. But I don't know you don't know what scavengers are around that can pull apart or pick apart a deer. Sure. But
my thing is, with this story, I don't think he killed the deer. I think he was scavenging on the deer,
mm-hmm.
seeing the car, and did basically a carcass, like, display. Prize display. Where these animals, a lot of times, whether it's jaguars fighting lions, anything. Not jaguars fighting lions, leopards fighting lions.
Okay.
Or they just try to act big and bad, and if you call their bluff, they're like, well, I lost this meal.
Yeah.
It's defending a meal. Defending a kill.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it flew right at the car. It was, you know, snarling, yelling, you know, making all this noise. And once the car was still coming at it, it's like, ah, and then it takes off.
Yeah, he wasn't done eating.
Well, he lost.
Or picking, yeah.
He lost. I kind of think that's maybe what happened. If it's so a more flesh and blood animal, or at least with flesh and blood needs. Like John Keel weighed in on this one, this particular case too, for the Ohala's one.
Okay.
And ultra-terrestrials, he's got several books, even in this studio, we have several John Keel's books about ultra-terrestrials, which is kind of that same thing where they're interdimensional or extra-dimensional creatures. Whether they're intelligent or not, you know, there's a spectrum of that.
Okay.
Where, you know, we talked about the Mothman. To me, the Mothman, the actual West Virginia, Point Pleasant, real Mothman, was an intelligent creature, but not like a technology user, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like it was asking for help. It just seemed scared.
It had emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, you know, and just, it didn't want to be here either. And I think these guys, these bat monstrosities, may be just animals like that, but a little lower on the intelligence spectrum.
Okay. More animalistic.
More animalistic, where they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know what to do. This isn't their normal thing. You know, they're trying to scavenge and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah. So that's that one.
Now that's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where they draw the line on it, but I'm just going to assume that it's a real happening that really happened. Was there any like sort of documentation or?
I mean, Linda did Godfrey did a full investigation.
I mean, as far as like legally, like with law or like reports being filed.
So with one of the lacrosse sightings that Linda looked into, she does have the official reports from the game warden at the time that had seen something.
Okay.
And from the highway construction workers, she has signed basically affidavits of what they had seen.
Oh, cool. Okay.
There is a little bit of a paper. Linda Godfrey.
Very thorough.
Yes. So she definitely, Wahala, I'm trying to find it here.
Just sometimes with some of these stories, it's good to have that.
Yeah, Wahala did sign stuff too.
Okay.
Linda knew where, like, who Wahala was and everything like that. But as far as, because Wahala went on some of the documentaries about this particular one.
Mm-hmm.
And just did as Wahala. Linda did know his full name, but just so I would always talk about, like, Wahala.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, too, with it being more animalistic with those. I mean, as from a speculative biologist point of view, your take on it, it makes a whole lot of sense.
I mean, it did animal things, right?
Exactly.
I mean, the radiation sickness, if it was radiation sickness, is the only
oddball characteristic
out of normal animalistic things, which kind of points you towards it. What did John Keel call him? I just read it.
Ultra-terrestrial.
Ultra-terrestrials.
I like that. I like that term.
Which, yeah.
It's like our not-from-here term.
Yeah. He also calls them interdimensional interlopers.
Ooh, that's got some wordplay to it. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a band name or an album.
That's a lot. That's
interdimensional interlopers.
That's too many eyes.
I think that's the name of our third album that's going to come out.
Oh, yeah. What was our first two?
Well, we haven't got there yet.
Okay.
We haven't released them or recorded them. But the third one's going to be interdimensional interlopers. Remember that. Everyone at home, don't forget.
All right. When we come back from our ad break, we're going to recover some of the Bat Squatch, the original Bat Squatch stuff.
All right.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah.
What are we going to do if you should take a kid fishing?
I think you should reach out to future anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio.
What should you put on those fish?
What should you put on the fish?
If you catch fish to eat, what should you put on them?
Oh, you should sprinkle a little bit of Flavors of the Forest before you pop them there on the grill or in the oven. Just, you know, a nice baked fish. Flavors of the Forest will elevate that dish. All sorts of different kinds. It's garlic-based, freeze-dried seasoning, where they have just basic, your pure garlic. You have your spicy. You even have a choice of a horseradish. You got ginger, even the special seasonal cranberry. So, yeah, check out flavorsforest.com/corn. Well, things are looking good for the Jamboree this year so far.
True, but I wonder if there's anything else that can make this event even more awesomer.
Well, there's really only one person that could be the judge of that.
Hey, that's a great idea. Let's give him a call.
Two Whoops and Tree Knox, Sasquatch is there.
Hey guys, what's up?
Well, we're going over the schedule for the Jamboree, but we wanted to see what you think.
All right, well, let me take a look here real fast. Okay, so the VIP tickets are $50 a piece, and that gets you into the Friday night dinner and meet and greet with the speakers and special guests. Monster costume contest? Well, that looks good. A free family room with activities for the kids? Well, that's outstanding. A Bigfoot calling contest. Of course, it looks like you're going to have a lot of food. Oh, good, and you'll have the craft vendors back. Last year, I actually found a Squatchtopus. Well, let's see who the speakers are this year. Oh, you have Connor and Alexis Fiden, and Randy Bauer, Ron Murphy, outstanding. Oh good, you guys will be speaking. Which J-Clone is going to be there? That's my question. And Tony Merkel as well. Oh good, you're going to have Jake Dressel back. He was excellent last year. And Brian Wolf. Why does that name sound familiar? Well, I have to tell you, gentlemen, having gone to a number of these events, this looks like it's going to be one of the best ones of the year. Say, will Tiny Toes be there?
Tiny Toes?
Yeah, the little guy that was there last year.
Oh, you mean Paul.
Yep. Tiny Toes will be there as well.
Tiny Toes.
Cool. Well, this all sounds fantastic, guys. And I look forward to seeing you there. Until then, Squatch Dust!
Bye!
Nice. Squatch Dust. Gets me every time.
It was, Bat Squatch, the original episode we did, season one, episode 36.
Ooh, you were close. You're halfway there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think you said 17.
No.
All right.
I said 36.
Oh, yeah, that's what you said, yeah. All right.
When you're the one editing things, you can edit. I said 36.
All right, fair. Go ahead, edit it out. Change it.
No.
Exactly, yeah. All right, so now we're going to revisit, what, the original... The Mount St. Helens Bat Squatch.
A half-ape, half-bat monstrosity.
Blah.
Known as the Bat Squatch. Now, so we're going to talk about the state of Washington in the United States. Major cities, you know, Portland, Seattle, towering, looming figure that changed the world, known as Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, it's a horrible environmental destruction.
In March of 1980... the region was rocked when Mount St. Helens experienced a major volcanic eruption that unleashed a destructive force on a catastrophe scale, flattening vast swaths of forest and buildings over a 230-square-mile area instantly, spurling forth massive amounts of ash and 1.5 million metric tons of sulfur dioxide into the air, creating the largest debris avalanche ever recorded.
And I really recommend anyone, you can find satellite photos of before and after.
Yeah, where half the mountain's gone?
Yes. If you have not seen that, just go ahead and look at it. It is truly wild.
The eruption was so violent, it completely obliterated the top of the mountain. So it lost around, before the eruption, the summit was 9,677 feet. After the eruption, it was 8,336 feet. So blew off over 1,000 feet of mountain.
Wow.
On the top.
That's so much.
And it left an enormous crater.
I can't even imagine it in my head.
1,000 feet?
Of mountain.
Imagine 1,000 feet down, like, in the earth.
I can't.
Just gone like a hole.
Yeah, I can't.
But off the top of a mountain.
Yeah. My mind is like, won't do it.
Instantly vaporize. When the dust cleared, dozens of people were dead, and hundreds, if not thousands, of homes were destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 1980s eruption is to this day the single most destructive volcanic eruption in U.S. history. And it also marked the beginning of one of the strangest cryptozoological tales of all time.
Shoot, and there's not just this one.
The Bigfoots, Bigfoot recovery programs.
There's so much involved with the Mount St. Helens.
Firefighters saying that they've seen Bigfoots running from the fires.
Yes, that military that is supposed to be working with the Bigfoot. Yeah, like there's a lot going into this. So it's not just Bat Squatch, people. But that's what we're going to cover today.
It was just Bat Squatch.
Today, it's just Bat Squatch.
It was just Bat Squatch.
Yeah, okay.
There was no Bigfoot scene.
All right, whatever.
Because Mount St. Helens is not that far from where the Patterson and Gimlin film took place.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
No, right. I think it's within 100 miles or 200 miles, I think.
That's relatively close, yeah. I would say.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
At least here on the East Coast, you know, because our states.
That was California, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Washington. Okay.
Yeah. What was I saying? Oh, because the East Coast, you know, we're a pretty large state for the East Coast here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Out west, they just keep getting bigger and bigger and right. bigger.
Yeah.
So 2 hours, you know, 3.5 hours, you can cross our whole state.
That's very true, yeah.
Okay. So 1990s, it wasn't until 1994, though, they would start to feel the launch of a new monster sneaking its way in the range beyond merely Mount St. Helens. So, yeah. When the volcano erupted, it killed everything, livestock, forest. Yeah, there was something. So as, you know, the smoke cleared, and the area was not doing well. We're talking still in 1994. There were hundreds of miles of dead forest.
Mm-hmm.
There were trees still standing, trees fallen, just dead from the ash, you know.
And the landslides.
Yeah,
and
it's just dead.
It was wild.
On the edges of this, pretty soon after, the people that survived, you know, talked about this intense feeling of dread, whether it was just all kinds of stuff. But, you know, a volcano erupted and killed people they knew and
right, yeah.
destroyed thousands of homes.
That was horrible.
But a weird thing started happening where pets and even livestock started to be killed and go missing around the edge of this dead forest.
Interesting. Okay.
Yet while the sightings began trickling in from in the 1880s, or sorry, the 1980s, they weren't taken very seriously. People are just thinking, blaming a lot of bears and that kind of stuff. You know, anything that survived the blast that is maybe injured and hungry, you know, taking easier prey.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot with animals that seem to target livestock. Animals aren't dumb. They know people have guns. They know people are bad news. When animals start targeting livestock, they know it's normally for last resort stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're easy prey. You walk up to sheep in a field and eat them. But yeah, so the 1994 sighting, though, launched the world into interest about the Bat Squatch.
Okay.
In April of 1997, a young man named Brian was driving along a remote stretch of road in the dark wilderness on his way to an isolated camp known as Camp One, located on Mount Rainier's foothills near Lake Capawish, when his vehicle abruptly and unexpectedly stopped in his tracks. Considering that the pickup truck was a perfect working condition and had not stepped on the brakes, it just confused him why he lost power in this way. After several attempts to restart the truck had failed, it seemed as if he was stuck out there on this secluded road in the middle of nowhere with only the beams of his headlights holding back the encroaching darkness. So, yeah. And there's hundreds of versions of these tales.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to really
boil it down to
figure out who was
the truth.
So one of the big parts of this story was that he was out there going to, you know, to start reclaiming some of this wood. And it wasn't really weird for the trucks to fail out in this area because their air intakes would get clogged with all the soot.
And the ash in
still
the air.
A decade and a half later.
Which is wild. Well, yeah, because it's just laying there. So anything that disturbs it, it goes up in the air again.
Yeah. And it's not dust. I want to make that very clear. Mm. Volcanic ash.
A little different.
When it gets in, I've seen it get into like pictures of it getting into like water pumps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it just turns into this black concrete sludge. Mm. And it cakes. Any bit of moisture, it just cakes to something.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like normal earth dust. So I can see it definitely, what?
Normal earth dust. I don't know. It's just a funny. Like,
dust that's from earth.
I get
it. Because a lot of your house dust is you. You know that, right?
Right, right, yeah. Now it's just a funny line to say.
So yeah, he did not have much time to really think about it. As soon as he saw something come gliding into the light of the headlights, which he first thought was an extremely large bird, which would provide to be anything but, as it loomed into view, he could see that it was an absolutely massive winged humanoid ape-like creature, estimated at being around 9 feet tall. As it drew closer, he could discern it had a bluish tinge to its fur. A muzzled, bat-like face with extremely sharp protruding teeth and glowing eyes. The talons on the end of its feet looked like that of any massive bird of prey. The bizarre beast made its way to the small nearby field just off the road to settle onto the earth in a way that the witness noted was almost like an aircraft coming down for a landing. What?
Just imagine that coming down like an aircraft.
That's a big bird.
Yeah.
It was standing there staring at me, like it was resting, like it didn't know what to think of me. I was scared. It raised a hair on my head. I didn't feel threatened. I just felt like I was not safe, like I was out of place. It looked right at me in a deep stare, like right through me. I was standing perfectly still. I stood for how long, I don't even know. Just a few minutes. Several minutes. Then its fingers twitched, and its wings began to unfold again. Those wings were as wide as the road. It turned its head, and it looked back at me, and it started flapping its wings. And a few minutes later, my truck started back up again. I took off as fast as I could. Mm. So that's it.
Yeah.
So
it didn't get him.
No, and he said he was scared, but it didn't feel like it was threatening him.
Okay.
It just was a big creature. Dang. It was tired. It seemed like it was just tired looking for a place to land.
I was going to say, like, they kind of ended up in the same place at the same time. Yeah.
And then it was like, what is that? You know?
Right.
What are you doing out here?
I've done that in the wild before. I think you have, too.
Oh, gosh. Elk.
Black bear.
Well, black bear. The wolves have been like that. Both, like, you're not supposed to be here.
Right, yeah.
Both of us.
Uh-huh. It's kind of scary. I don't know. It's not a good feeling to come across in a while, but you kind of, you have two responses. You're either like cautious and confident, like, all right, I'm just going to get out of this, or you're scared and running. There's not really an in-between in my personal opinion.
No, I mean, there's not.
Or my personal experience.
Yeah, it's a very interesting creature, very interesting encounter.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was being seen immediately after the St. Helens eruption. But 1994 is kind of when it started taking off.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that doesn't mean, or what's that mean? Did it come from the volcano? Or is it just something that lived out in the forest that is very rare? And its habitat just got destroyed. So it's like, what do I do?
Both, I think, are possible.
Possible.
I think cave, we talked about in the original one.
Yeah.
That there were thousands of lava tubes and caves that were, you know, in the eruption either. Maybe they were coming, they lived in the caves, like the Van Meter we talked about, coming out at night to feed, and then the caves all shut. So this one or the small group of them
got forced stuck. Out. Yeah.
So, you know, they're just kind of trying to survive as best they can, and then I do think they kind of just died out.
I wonder, too, if the caves either collapsed, or what if all the soot and all the...
Just plugged it,
or the air quality in there was just unlivable.
I mean, even lava could have re-entered the cave.
Yeah, refilled them back up.
Yeah, because a lot of the caves are part of the ancient lava tube system.
Mm, okay.
So, they're lava tubes.
It's like a destructive volcanic explosion could have filled them back up, perhaps?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because any of the bat squatch encounters, even the violent / scary ones.
Yeah.
It didn't do a good job of hunting people. It was not designed to hunt people.
Mm-hmm.
Every person won.
That's true, yeah.
That we know of, I guess, you know. Even when it was, like, stalking the kids at that camp,
mm-hmm.
it didn't do a great job of that either.
Right, yeah.
Like, yep. It was just seemed like an animal. Like, it was really hungry and out of its element and just... I mean, a carnivore. I'm not saying it's, you know...
It's going to act...
Not an evil creature.
Right.
You know, just because a lion eats you does not mean they're evil.
Even a hippo.
Yeah, they're doing what they're programmed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like it was really out of place. Mm-hmm. And was just trying. So, interesting enough, the most well-documented, widely covered sighting was it only 1 year later. Woo.
You'll get through
it. I'm tired.
You'll get it.
Was also in 1994.
Oh, okay. Good year.
Was in similar nature, though. So this is where some of the confusion comes in for a lot of these stories. I think they get mashed together.
Yeah, I know I did.
Because there was like three or four really famous ones from 1994 mm-hmm. that were very similar. But it was a local liquor store owner, an avid mountaineer, and an amateur pilot named Butch. Claimed to see seen something when he was flying his plane over Mount Rainier. During midday, when an enormous winged creature flew up next to him, kept pace with him for a few minutes before flying out of sight.
Mm. Right by his airplane?
Yeah, like it came up, looked at him, kept up with him, and then pulled back off and went somewhere else.
Mm, okay.
So this is, we're still going with the thread that this is a natural animal that is either locked out of its habitat or, you know, it may have got excited thinking it was another one of them.
Hmm.
Seen another large flying thing, like, oh, is that one of me?
I'm checking out.
And then once it realized, oh, it's not, you know, it went back down.
I wish someone could describe it flying, like, its actual motion. Because you know how birds fly and bats fly? It's very, very different.
Well, yes, no. Yes, no.
The motion that you see with your eyes.
Yeah.
It is very different looking.
You're talking little bats, though.
Sure.
Giant flying foxes fly much similar to like condors and like other really? Flying animals.
So I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I mean,
well, even birds themselves, like a woodpecker,
they fly very differently.
Yeah, very different. Even well, like we mentioned, I think last week, the killdeer have their own unique. It's this week. They have their own unique just flight pattern. The way they flap their wings is just different. And so with this thing, I would like to have seen it howl, because if it's got big like bat like leathery wings, you know. I'm interested in seeing how those function in action. I don't know. It's just, that's curious to me.
Again, in 1998, there was another one that gets kind of lost in the, like, clogged up as the same thing. A witness claimed to be a logging trucker actually hit one of the creatures on an isolated mountain.
Hmm.
So he's up there trying to get some reclaimed wood, is what it's called.
Yeah.
And he smacked into a bat squatch.
Hmm.
The trucker had been barreling along the road and suddenly made contact with something that was hunched down in the middle of the road.
Mm.
So he kind of comes around an edge. He couldn't slam on the brakes fast enough and just smoked something.
When are they going to start? Remember that show? It was like on, I think it was History, which is funny. I think it was American Loggers. Remember that? I used to watch it. It was really popular. They had like six different logging camps. You know, they jump back and forth. Sure. All the drama, them pulling out the cut wood or reclaim wood. What if they mash that show with
bat squatch
or cryptids? With cryptids,
like Hylian swamp monsters fighting us for this wood pile?
Yes, this is it. I think we got a new show idea. Discovery. This is our intellectual property.
The trucker was pretty sure he hit a stump or something in the road.
Okay,
like it looked like a massive stump. Mm-hmm. The way it was hunched over. And he's like, somebody moved it or it fell off like a cliff and rolled into the road and he just smashed it.
Mm-hmm.
When the vehicle teetered over the edge of the road and slid down a sharp drop on a steep rock, it caused a rock slide.
Mm-hmm.
The shock witness reportedly ran to go and tried... Oh, sorry. Did I skip a line? When he first took it as a tree stump. No, yeah. The shocked witness reportedly ran to go and try to help the other occupant when he realized that the truck had not hit a log, but rather, and so the guy's seen this happen behind him, but rather it hit an enormous winged humanoid that seemed to be none off for the worse for wear after the thunderous impact. And this is what he described. The creature stood about 15 feet high.
Oh my gosh.
When it was sitting.
Oh my gosh.
Hunched over in front of me. I later discovered that this creature would measure at least easily 30 feet from head to bottom once it was airborne. I say bottom because it didn't really have a tail. The head of the animal was unusually small and compact for its extremely massive body. A beady purple eye would remind anyone as to who the misfortune of seeing them. believe me that this creature could have eaten a whole family, while other characteristics of the head also had many features of the Roten family, which are bats.
Mm-hmm.
Being noteworthy, Comet was long pointed ears from which protruded on top of the creature's head. The nose is rather small, though. The most pronounced feature of the nose being the unusual color of purple.
Mm.
It is believed that the only creature in the world to have a purple nose. The wingspan of the creature looked very small, as if it probably couldn't fly, or if it could, it was just for very short distances.
Okay.
So this is kind of opposite of all the other bat squatches.
Yeah, this one's a lot different.
But it still looks bat-ish. It had wings.
Right.
It just was massive.
Yeah, 30 feet long.
Mm-hmm. Once the creature was airborne, the wings extended out from the wingspan a good 40 feet. The most disturbing feature was the large beast was its hands. It appeared to have four sets of them.
Hmm. So this is not bats. This is not the bat squatch that we're referring to, in my opinion.
This is the same road.
Yeah, but
same area.
This is something different.
Is it?
I think so.
Or is it sexual dimorphism? Perhaps I should clarify what I mean by two sets of clawed hands on each wing. In midway, another set on the torso. Almost as if it had human hands also.
So like a set of wings and a set of hands.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Which has been described in some of the other bat squatch stuff.
Yeah.
Like a winged humanoid instead of like a normal bat.
Yes.
Also, if they were human, I didn't notice the hands on the torso until another encounter of the large animal the next day. The creature was very frightening and looked to be almost a cross between a large bat and an excessively large furry human.
I'm shocked that the truck that hit it didn't cause much damage. You know, it's being something that big to be able... I guess they didn't really describe it. Well, they just said it flew off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So something that big that can fly, I would feel like would be light and vulnerable to a truck.
If it was a natural Earth.
Oh, if it... Yeah, not an ultra-terrestrial?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That, like you said, you know, the ultra-terrestrials have different rules.
What if it was a, you know, an inorganic being that was created, and maybe its skin or bones are made of carbon fiber, and it's very...
Here's one of the thoughts, is that we talked about this with Dogman.
Huh?
So this was the latest, like, well, not the latest, there's more sightings in, like, 2006 and 2018 and all that, but this one was in 1998. We talk about the U.S. government cloning and manipulating cryptids,
mm-hmm,
and making them into weapons.
Mm-hmm.
What if they did that with a bat squatch? And that's what this thing was.
Wouldn't put it past him at all.
They hybridized between a bat squatch and a human.
I wouldn't put it past him at all.
And that's why it was so weird looking, hyper tough, couldn't really fly very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was made to be, you know, even what if it's a crossbred, like a genetic monstrosity with a human, or not a human, a Bigfoot and
a bat.
A bat squatch.
Or a bat, yeah. Yeah, they keep trying to. Who knows?
Because remember the Michigan trucker, the dog, man, he seemed 30 feet tall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was weird. I really wonder if this is a bat squatch that has been manipulated genetically by the U.S. military or the U.S. government.
Well, what happens when you mix two animals and you breed, crossbreed two animals
hybrid vigor. They're often a lot bigger than either parent species.
I mean, like, so for example, a tiger and a lion makes a liger, mm-hmm, and the liger is generally massive, much bigger than both of the parents combined.
Not combined.
Well, not together, combined. Sorry. Not combined. Both parents. The lion, bigger. And the tiger, bigger. Both of them. It's bigger than both of them.
Yes.
So, yeah. Maybe it's just a hybrid vigor Bigfoot Sasquatch living on the mountain still.
A Bigfoot Sasquatch?
Bigfoot bat squatch, sorry. Bigfoot bat squatch, hybrid vigored, government manipulated creature, also known as an abomination.
Well, the other thing I think could be pulled back onto is the window areas, like with the Mothman stories,
mm-hmm,
and even the Chicago Mothman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We blame the Hydron Collider in Chicago for a lot of the Mothman's
100%.
And then we talked about the Mothman stuff, the maybe illegal experimentation they were doing under the dynamite factory.
Just like Montauk Island.
Yeah, or yes, like Stranger Things, like literally a space where they're opening up doors.
Portals, yeah. What if the volcanic eruption opened up a natural portal, yeah.
Yeah, that it It's such a violent act that it caused portals to open up, spit up a bunch of creatures.
Mm-hmm. From inner dimensions. Mm-hmm. Or also we know it as space. Space is, it came from space probably. It opened a portal, some space interdimensional thing. Sure. I don't know. Being ridiculous.
The giant ones? What if they are females?
Like the 30 footers, the big, big ones? Could be.
So the bats do live in colonial families, some species.
Is there ever like a queen bat in a colony?
Kind of.
Oh, really?
There can be like nanny bats where a lot of other bats will feed them so they can leave the pups.
With her. Yeah, the babysitter. So
they'll be old and a lot of them never leave the caves again.
Yeah. Retired role.
Kind of, yeah. Well, orcas do it too.
Yeah.
So bats, there are some species that have what appears to be much more complex social structures than we understand currently.
Okay.
There are several mega species of bats. Like, there was a joke recently. Like, the bats in Montana, nobody knows where they go in the winter.
Oh, yeah. We just talked about that.
They don't know.
Yeah, they go somewhere.
Wait, they have no idea.
Well, someone said, check the caves.
Yeah.
And then what'd they say?
They check the caves.
They're not in the caves.
They're not in the caves.
Yeah.
Nobody knows where they go. Nobody knows.
My guess, I don't know the answers. Huh?
Hollow Earth.
I mean, well, yeah, in a way, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
I'm not joking. If there is these massive, you know, you go deep enough, there's whole worlds.
That's what I was going to say. The bats are, I mean, animals are intelligent. I mean, they just are naturally intelligent. They're going to adapt to their situation. That's why they're still here. Because if they weren't, they'd all be gone. We would have ruined everything if they weren't. Oh, yeah. What if they just know, like, here's these remote caves where it's safe. Maybe another bat, you know, they communicate. They all direct them. It's big enough for everybody. And they all just go there now. Like, eels go into the Sargasso Sea. It's safe. And humans aren't there. That could just be it. That's simple. And that's all I got to say about that.
All right. I think that's all we got to say about all of this.
Yeah, this has been a fun, like, revisit of the Bat Squatch.
Part 2.
Yeah, part 2.
7 seasons later.
Electric Boogaloo. Now we're not doing that on this one.
I think it may be almost the exact episode, too, because this is 30-something, and that was 30-something.
I think we're in the 40s now. We're in the 40s now.
Oh, gosh. We have to do a season finale soon.
It's coming up, 24 hours.
I may make the season 10 episodes longer.
Why?
Because I'm not... Is it fair?
Oh, well, you know what?
Fair in the jamboree.
It's just how it falls. We're just going to have to do it.
I'll just be like, hey, this season's 60 episodes.
What if the season finale is just, it'd be past already.
Oh, what if we don't do one? A surprise.
They expect us to do it now.
Like, make it 15 minutes long.
A short
one. One of the fearsome folklore creatures that everybody hates when we do one of those episodes.
Why?
I don't know. It's our most negative commented ones.
The fearsome folklores?
Yeah.
Okay. The ones that aren't real?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them.
All right.
I've been the Great and Powerful Mystery.
And I've been J-Clone 26.
We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cribbins the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.